Right, we are on the air. So here's some Shaila sent in. First Shaila sent in was from Josh. So Josh asked the following question: are you allowed to make ice cubes, make your drinks cold and icy and slushy on Shabbos? So it actually is a major debate in halacha. The issue here is called noilad or moilad, to create something new. You're taking something that was a liquid and turning it into a solid. So there is a debate. There is a certain place, the hell that it was aser, but he seemed to have been outruled. And halacha l'maisa, it is okay to go ahead and make ice cubes or your drinks cold and icy. The only thing is, you have to make sure that you're doing it for Shabbos. So if it's Friday night, Shabbos morning, if it still get cold and benefit from it, that's fine. But if you're going to go ahead and make ice cubes on Shabbos so that you'll have them matzi Shabbos, that's a problem. But to go ahead and make them, it's fine. If you have an automatic ice machine, that's fine. Just to make sure you're not making the electricity go on and off. But the ice cubes that was made is okay. I believe it was a safer called David Misharim that said it was a problem. But practically speaking, it is okay. So hello, Martin and the Siegel family, Team Siegel. So the first shot I sent in was ice cube. It is mutter to make ice cubes on Shabbos and drinks cold and icy on Shabbos. Just make sure that you can benefit from it on Shabbos and don't do it with the intention of having them for after Shabbos. Shaila number two was sent in, not by Nachum, but for Nachum. It was sent in by Rich. Is a gun muksa on Shabbos? What are you allowed to do with a gun if you have a gun? I know most people here don't have one, but there's a special person who does. So what is the status of a gun on Shabbos? So the halacha is that it's a kli shamalacha lisser. It's muksa as a kli shamalacha lisser, which means you can't move it for its normal purpose to kill people or shoot animals. And you cannot just move it for fun, but you are allowed to move it for its place, if you need its place, or for it itself. For example, one example they give is, let's say you want to scare someone. Now, not from a mean way, but you want to use it to scare someone. Your life's not in danger. You just want to scare someone. You want to make sure it doesn't get to a dangerous situation. No problem. Show them your gun. Now, if it is a dangerous situation, then everything's out there. If it's a real danger, a real sakana, you live in certain parts of the world or areas or neighborhoods that it is dangerous, so then for sure you can do whatever you need to do. And let's say you don't know. Let's say you're going somewhere, maybe, maybe not. So then you definitely could carry it with you. If there's no Erev, so you're doing perhaps an Issa D'Oraisa, perhaps, of carrying, it's got to be a real danger, real threat of danger. And even then, it's better to carry it in an abnormal way, which if it's talking to your belt, that may be enough to be considered an abnormal way. That's not how you carry things. Now, that may be the way you carry a gun, but that's not where you carry things, so that would be okay. So bottom line is, if there's real danger, do whatever you need to do. If there's potential danger, you can use it and show it off to scare people away, but it should not be done just for fun because it really is a muksa object. And shot number three sent in last week's share by the Siegel family was like this. You wash your hands and your hand is still wet and then someone touches your hands. Someone who did not wash, you wash your hands for the meal and someone who did not wash touches your hands. What's the status of your hands? So if your hands are wet and the person who touched them did not just wash his hands, so you need to wash your hands again. If you have already made a bracha, you do not need to make a second bracha. Okay, so your hands are wet, you made a bracha, you didn't make a bracha, someone touches your hands, you do not wash his hands, you need to wash your hands again, but you don't make a second bracha. Now let's say your hands are dry, you had just washed and dried your hands, and then someone touches your hands, whether his hands are wet or dry, doesn't matter. You do not need to wash your hands again. Some are machmir to do it. If you want to, you can, but you do not need to do that, okay? So your hands are wet and they got touched, wash again. Your hands are dry and they got touched, you do not need to wash again. That's nothing.
What is considered dry? Like if you dry with a towel, they're not like perfectly dry, but they're...
Very good question. So dry, clear. Dripping, clear. Nachum's asking, after you dry with a towel, there, if you touch something, you may make it wet. There may be a feeling of wet to it. It has to be that there is a, I believe it has to be like a mamasha of water in your hand. It meaning point of there has to be water on your hand that gets tummy. So if your hand, everything's absorbed, and just when you feel your hand, it may feel cold, that's fine. But if there's still droplets on your hand, that's considered wet. It's gotta be that there is a piece of water, call it whatever that means, a piece of water on your hand. Okay, that was Shaila number three. Okay, so yes, ice cubes on Shabbos. Yes, carrying on if needed in certain ways on Shabbos. And yes, wash your hands again if they were touched, if they were wet, and not if they were dry. Okay, here we go. So now to tonight's topic, kosher and matir, right? So we've been doing some alignment tests and halachas. So kosher and matir are two separate halachas. Kosher means tying, not that it is kosher to eat. Kosher means tying, making a knot on Shabbos. Matir means untying. Untying an animal Shabbos. In the Mishkan, these two malachas were used in making nets. Hello, Abba. We're just starting out Kosher and Matir. So in the Mishkan, they were used to make nets to catch the chilazon fish that was used for dyes in some of the curtains and some of the clothing. So they would have to tie and untie knots. And that's the malach of kosher. Also, some say making the curtains in the Mishkan would require the tying process. Okay, so that's where in the Mishkan was kosher and matir. The idea behind kosher and matir is that you are joining together two separate things through twisting, tying, intertwining, two separate things coming together. It's different than another malacha called tofer. Tofer means sewing. That's a whole different malacha. There's a difference in lumdus between them. Tofer is taking two things and making them one. Through stitching together, you now change each of the two things. It's no longer two things, it's one thing. Whereas kosher is two things and still is two things. It's just these two things are now tied together. That's what kosher is. When you untie kosher, you're putting it back exactly the way it was. Kosher and matir, their team. Matir means undoing it and putting it back the way it was. By tofer, when you stitch something, you create something new. You need to rip it, tear it. That's another malacha called korea. So tofer and korea are one team. Kosher and matir are another team. Okay, so tonight we're going to be focusing on kosher and matir. Now, most of what we'll be discussing tonight is the malacha of kosher. But there's a rule which has one or two exceptions. And the rule is, any knot that's usher to tie on Shabbos is also usher to untie on Shabbos. Whether the knot was made on Shabbos or before Shabbos, a knot that's usher to make on Shabbos is also a knot that's usher to untie on Shabbos. There will be some exceptions, but in general, that's the rule. Okay, so here we go. Let's get to know some knots. So there are two criteria which you need to ask yourself every time you want to make or untie a knot. Is it a kesher of an uman, a craftsman's knot, and is it a kesher shel kayama? Is it a knot that will last, right? We give a bracha to a chasen kala, they should have a kesher shel kayama, a lasting knot. So that's the expression, but it comes from halacha. A kesher shel kayama means a lasting knot. Now we're going to explain what each of those two things mean. What's considered a craftsman's knot, and what's considered a knot that's made to last. And here's a general rule. If you have both of them, we'll get the definition in a second, but if you have both, if it is a kesher of an uman and the kesher of hayama, then it's an iser d'oraisa. If you don't have both, meaning it's not a kesher uman, and it is not a knot that's made to last, so then it's mutter. And if it has one of the two, so then in certain scenarios, it's machlokes if it's daraisa derabanan, but it's still aser. Hello, doctor. So here's the way it goes. We are now in the middle of, we're starting kosher, the malach of kosher, okay? So now we're going to go through. If it is a craftsman's knot or a knot that's made to last, it's a daraisa. If it is neither of those two, mutter. And if it's one of those two, aser, at least Rabban. Now, what do these things mean? So the kesher of an uman, a craftsman's knot, back in the day, you would make knots for boats, or I guess they still do today, But there are certain type of crafts that would require special types of knots. Even though we don't know about them today, or some of us don't know about them today, the issue that's relevant for us today is any knot that's strong that will not come out by itself. A strong knot that won't come out by itself, that is what halakhically is termed a kesher of an uman, a craftsman's knot. And then you're going to have one of those two criteria. So you tie a knot that's hard, chazak, it won't come out, that's a kesher uman. You have one criteria. The second criteria is a knot that's made to last, meaning your intention. When you make this knot, what are you having in mind? Do you want this knot to last or not to last? If you make it to last, check, you have the criteria of kesher shakayama. If it's not made to last, you don't have that. Nachon, there you go. So now, what's considered lasting? If you want it to be more than 7 days, you want this knot to be around and lasting more than 7 days, that's considered a knot made to last. If you want to make it for less than 24 hours, that's not a knot made to last. Between 24 hours and 7 days is a machlekes. Is that considered lasting or not lasting? Less than a week, more than a day. Is that considered not as made to last? And therefore, there are some leniencies with them in that area. But as a rule, we're machmir, at least with the Rabbanan, not to make that type of knot. Okay, so now we have our criteria again. Let's put it together. If you make a tight knot for more than 7 days, and we're machmir even for more than 24 hours, if your intention is that this tight knot should last for more than 24 hours, you cannot make that knot on Shabbos. And if you made that knot before Shabbos, or by accident on Shabbos, well, I shouldn't say that. If you made that knot before Shabbos, you cannot untie that knot on Shabbos. A knot that you're not allowed to make, you're also not allowed to untie. So therefore, if you have a strong knot that was made to last more than 25 hours, you cannot untie that on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to make that knot on Shabbos. If, however, it's a weak knot, it's loose, it's not strong, and it was made to last less than 24 hours, you're allowed to make that knot on Shabbos, and you're allowed to untie such a knot on Shabbos. If you have one of the two, it's tight or made to last, you should not make that knot on Shabbos. Okay, we're going to get to practical examples very soon, but that's the rule. Those are the klalim, the rules of this malacha. If you got two, it's a deraisa. You got zero, mutter. You got one of the two, either it's a derabanan or it's a deraisa. Okay, now, one major exception to these rules are to untie a knot that was made accidentally. If, in doing something, you accidentally made a knot that's strong, you're still allowed to untie that knot. Because it was made accidentally, we don't view that as a real knot. For sure, your intention wasn't for it to be a knot. It just got made. Sometimes you're busy with something and like, oh, it got tangled up. Oh, it got knotted. That thing is allowed to untie. But if it was made on purpose, then you cannot untie that knot. What I'm not sure about, which I want to look into, is sometimes you'll find on Shabbos things that were all knotted. Now, you didn't knot them on purpose, but they were made. They've been like that for a month, a year. They've been knotted for a while. Or it was made before Shabbos unintentionally, but just happened. Or you'll have to untie that knot on Shabbos. I'm not sure. So that type of knot I want to put on hold. I hope to get back and answer that, Shaila. That came up in the last year. So I'm not sure about that. But for sure, on Shabbos, if you're busy with something and it got knotted up on Shabbos by accident, you can untie that knot. Okay, now let's get some examples. So now, here we go. Some examples are like this. Josh, I'm going right there. So you're not allowed to make a double knot. A double knot is for sure what we consider a strong knot. A double knot is, I don't mean a bow, I mean a knot. If they take a bag and you put the two ends and you tie them, and that's one, tie them again, two. If you tie that tight, that is a knot which you're not allowed to make. That's a double knot. However, when it comes to shoes, but if you make it loose, that's nothing. For example, by a robe, you take a robe or your raincoat and you take that little gartel, that little belt around the robe or around your raincoat, and you double knot that. Is that allowed or not allowed? So if you make it strong, that it will stay, that's not allowed. But if you do it like just for looks, you like the first one you do tight, that's fine, that's nothing. And the second one, that's a double knot. If you keep that loose, it's gonna come out by itself. So that's not considered double knot, that's not a problem. But if you do it tight, that is a problem. Now let's get to shoes. I'm assuming most people make the shoes the same way, which is you take the two laces, you do one tie over. That's one tie over, that's nothing. No problem. What do you do next? You make a bow. So we're gonna call that a single tie over with a bow on top. That's mutter, there's no problem with that. Now what's controversial, and what I got a lot of fighting with in the last year, and I was told to make sure I say this in this year, my certain rabbi I discussed things with, said make sure I publicize this. You are allowed to do a double bow. You are allowed to do a double bow, which means you do that single tie over, you do a bow. Then you want to double that bow. You're taking the bow and then doubling it. That's mutter. The reason why that's mutter is because you are able to untie that by just pulling one of the ends. You try it. Even if you haven't tried this at home, you can try this one at home. Even if you have a double bow, by pulling one of the ends or two of the ends, you can make that knot disappear. That shows it's not a real knot. A knot that you have to untie the knot, that's a real knot. But a bow, you can just pull it out, that's not a knot. Even a double bow, you have the ability to just pull it out. Maybe pull strong, but by pulling the ends, you can pull out that knot. Therefore, it's not considered a halakhic knot. Okay, so it's a chiddush, there's a certain sefer in English, Rabbi Ribiak. He wrote in a sefer, you cannot do that. But in the back, he said, after I wrote that, I was shown that you can pull it out and it undoes itself, and therefore there's no reason to be mocking her. It's okay. Okay, so when you want to tie your shoes, single tie over, bow, and a second bow is okay. What's not okay is double knot. So what Team Siegel are asking, by women's dresses, that you do it on purpose and you have to take it out. Great shiloh. So like this, if you want to make the bow, by women's dresses, you want to make a bow, no problem. Want to make a double bow based on what we just said, since you could pull it out without undoing it, since you could pull it out, so then you're allowed to make it. You're also allowed to undo it normally. Once you're allowed to make it, because it's not considered a knot, you could unmake it however you want to unmake it as well. But let's say it's a real double knot, so then you're not allowed to make that knot on Shabbos. If that was made by accident and you're wearing a dress, and it's double knotted by accident, so you can untie that knot. But you can't make that knot on purpose. And if you made that knot on purpose, you cannot untie that knot. A real double knot, that's strong. If it's loose, like you said, by a raincoat or a robe, with a loose double knot, that's not a double knot. That's just a loose thing, one on top of the other, that's fine. Now, a few more examples, hopefully make it all clear. Let's say you have a garbage bag, and you want to tie the garbage bag so things don't fall out, or that there shouldn't be a smell. So again, if you want to make one tie, that's fine. Now, the reason why that's fine, it's one knot, and it's not made to last. When you throw in the garbage, it either comes undone by itself, or once you throw in the garbage, we view it as if it's not in this world anymore because you don't care anymore. So if you tie a garbage bag with one knot, that's fine. But to do a strong double knot, that's not fine. Okay, so you have a garbage bag. Same thing by a food bag. You have a food bag. You're done with it. But you want to save the food and you want to keep it fresh. You can take the two ends, tie them together like that. That's fine. That is one that is considered one short, one soft knot that's going to be less than 24 hours because you're throwing it out. But if you want to keep it for longer, that may be a problem. But you should not do that. That's not how.
What's a lot of you make a knot by mistake? Are you allowed to leave it and then take it out later? Or once you decide to leave it, you can't take it out anymore?
What if you made it by mistake, you made a mistake. What you're going to do after the fact is going to change anything. Right? Nachum's asking, let's say you made a knot, which will last forever. And you know what? You're even happy that it lasts forever. The point is, though, you made it, you didn't want to make it. You made it. So you made it. You made it by accident. It's not going to help to untie it. Same thing where if you made a knot to last less than 24 hours. That was your intention. It was a real intention. Do you have to untie it at 24-hour mark? You don't have to. because the knot that you made was a knot that you didn't want to last 24 hours. Now, the fact that it will last 24 hours after the fact is okay. That can't be your intention, but if you did it, you don't have to go ahead and untie
another
it.
Thing.
Yeah.
If you make a knot by mistake, are you allowed to undo it right away?
If you made
a knot, your shoes.
If you made a knot by mistake, you can untie it. Yes.
Right. So I'm saying, can you just wait, like delay the untying, or once you decide to leave it, you can't untie it?
That knot is a knot which is much too untie. So you can untie whenever you want to untie it.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Now, another made example is neckties, what we call ties that we wear on Shabbos or some people during the week. So are you allowed to make that tie on Shabbos? So there are some people who I know very well that make their tie once in their life and leave it like that forever. And that's it. It goes on, off, without the zipper, just, you know, a regular knot. So you're not allowed to make that knot on Shabbos because that's a tight knot, which is made, I'm going to call it a tight knot. It's a knot which you're making to last for more than 24 hours. You cannot make that knot on Shabbos. If you're the type that makes the ties and then unties them after use, no problem. You can make that tie on Shabbos. It's not considered an Uma knot. And because it's not so tight, it's easy to undo. It's not an Uma knot. And you're doing it for less than 24 hours. So that's fine. Let's say you're the type who normally keeps it forever, but you need a tie on Shabbos. So then you have to have in mind, I'm making this tie, I'm making this knot for less than 24 hours and really mean it. And then you should untie it. But again, you don't really have to, but if you were sincere about it. So therefore, you really have to untie that knot within 24 hours, and that was your intention at the time of making it, and that's what you should do, that's okay. Now, what about making a tichel? You want to tie your tichel? Same rules. A loose double knot's fine, but if you make a knot and you keep it to last, that's not fine. You cannot make that knot on Shabbos. So you need to tie your tichel, so then what you should do is you do one tie over or even two loose ones with the intention of untying it within 24 hours. Tzitzis. You look at your talis, you look at your tzitzis, and you see some of the knots are coming undone. You cannot make a knot on Shabbos. Even if it's loose, you just want to tighten it. You cannot tighten that knot on Shabbos. Some people at the end of each string like to make a little knot so that it shouldn't unravel. You cannot make that knot on Shabbos. It's a knot that's made to last and strong. You cannot make that knot on Shabbos. Even though you already have four knots, you'll make a fifth knot, an eighth knot, a 20th knot. Every knot is usher to make, even you're just adding to the situation. So those knots by tzitzis are made to last, and therefore you cannot make those knots on Shabbos. Now you have a tricky thing by twist ties. You have these green or whatever, white, but twist ties you have that have the metal inside of them. There's a major problem to tie them. A major debate, I would say. It's a debate, is that considered tying? When you wrap that thing over, it's gonna last. It'll last forever. Some want to say that's regular iser of tying. And therefore, it is a problem to use those twist ties. What you're allowed to do is twist it once. That won't be considered a knot. So you go one twist. That's okay. It's not going to last. It'll temporarily last. So one twist is okay. And where it also came up for me recently is on a bottle of wine, champagne, that type of wine. On the top of the cork, they have this metal twist tie keeping the cork in its place. Are you allowed to untie that? Based on what I'm saying, no, you should not. That was wrapped around a lot and it's made to last. That's a knot that you're not allowed to untie. And then if you have that bottle, try to open it before Shabbos. Or what I do is I take a knife and you can make it wide, make the metal apart from each other, and then you can just slide it off. But to tie or untie a metal twist tie is definitely a problem. Do it one time. Another case that comes up, it's less nowadays, but by Sefer Torah, they used to have gartels around Sefer Torah. You do tie, you should not tie that. Nowadays, the metal or the Velcro, that's fine. But if you have the old fashioned gartel from the Sefer Torah, you should not tie them or not. By a lulav, you're supposed to make a double knot, special catcher by a lulav. You should do that before Yom Kippur. You should not do that on Yom Kippur. Okay, here we go. We have a nice mention. Right. So any talis, doctor, any talis knot that you have that you notice that you just want to tighten it, tightening an existing knot is considered making the knot. So therefore, you should not tighten any knot, even though it came loose. You should not tie it because what you're doing now is take a loose knot is not a real knot. So really what you're doing is you're making the knot. Now you are making that knot. And by tzitzit, your intention is to last. And therefore, you should not do that. Now, let's say you receive a platter of dessert on Shabbos. So let's say you got something from the bakery and it has these twist ties already on there. You got something that's already knotted. You cannot untie that because that knot was made to last and is strong. You cannot untie that knot. What you should do is just rip the bag open. So all these bakery things that have the real good knots, you should just rip it open. Also, let's say you knotted the bag. You took the bag and you knotted it. You should not do that knot on Shabbos, and you should not untie that knot on Shabbos. All right, and that is it. Okay, so fine. That is a general look at pictures. In general, whenever you don't know if it's strong, if it is strong knot or not made to last, do not untie those knots. As far as these foods, you can rip the bag open. One day, hopefully, we'll have a share about ripping bags. But if you rip a bag in a destructive fashion, it's not a problem. And therefore, for sure, rip open that food bag and don't untie the knot. Okay, we'll now head over to Shaila's Inn. They're answering someone twice this week, asked me a case, life case scenario, which was answered by this Chavis HaLavis. He said like this, let's say you have someone perhaps that you hate, or he really did something that would make you want to hate him. He did something to you, was really mean, evil, terrible, damaging. What should you do? How should you treat him? So guess what he said? He did something terrible to you. You should do chesed for him. How about that? He did something mean to you. You should give chesed. Give him chesed. How that work? The way you have to realize is he was obviously a messenger, the middleman from Hashem. Now, that doesn't absolve him. Just because he's the middleman, it doesn't absolve him of guilt. But the result of what he did was a result that Hashem wanted you to have. That was the result you were supposed to have. Now, he was the middleman. Now, the middleman, he will be responsible for what he did. But you have to look at the result. The result is something which was God had decreed. What he did wasn't good. Your job now is to try to dock him the kapsulas, try to give him the benefit of the doubt that he did that for whatever reasons he did that, a certain benefit of the doubt. Give him chesed in return, benefit of the doubt, and you have to do soul searching. You have to do soul searching of why did Hashem want that to happen to me? You have to do tshuva. So when he does something bad to you, your job is to soul search why did Hashem want that to happen? As far as a good question sent in over here, whether or not, if he could prevent it, right? So the doctor's asking, let's say someone could have prevented it. So you have Reuven who hurt you, or Reuven could have prevented from being hurt. At the end of the day, you have time with Reuven. Your job is to say, listen, the result came from Hashem. Reuven, whatever his involvement was, tried down in the kapsulas, try to give him chesed, and it will change your relationship with him. And you may turn him from an enemy to a friend. But more importantly is you're supposed to soul search. Why did that happen? Another question. Yes, Josh, there is. Not for us, because I'm giving over what the Chavis of Avos hold and what the real, I would say, sheet the Hashkafa of most opinions are. But Josh is right. There are some other opinions on this topic. I'm giving over the Chavis of Avos and the one that is given over in Yeshivas. Therefore, if a person did hurt you, you definitely don't get hurt. Don't go back and say, oh, give me some more. No, don't go back for more. But step away, realize the result is from Hashem, try to dine in kapsulas, try to return with chesed. Now, perhaps easier to said than done, but definitely try to make it happen. Now, in davening, so we're in doing Ashrei, I focus on test, ayin, and pay today in Ashrei. So in test, we have Toiv Hashem Akol, V'rachamav Al Kol Masa. So the Malvin points out a unique feature over here. Toiv Hashem Lakol. Hashem is good to everybody. The Malam explains and points out, even Rishon, even people that are not doing what Hashem wants them to do, Hashem is still good to them. And whoever you're holding in your life, even if you're not doing the best thing, Toiv Hashem Lakol. Hashem is still good for everybody. V'racham Lakol Masam. He wants everyone to do tshuva. So he doesn't just write you off because you've done bad. Okay, you're out of the family. You're off the will. You're off the family will. That's not what Hashem does. Toiv Hashem Lakol. He's good to everyone. So no matter where you're holding, Hashem is still being good for you. Now you have to know what that means. Sometimes he punches you and that's what's good for you. But there's never a point where, okay, Hashem not being good for you. It's never a thing. Toiv Hashem Lakol. So have that in mind next time you daven. And then by ayin and pay, it's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch brings down and the world tries to have special kavanah by poseach es yadacha. But if you look at ayin, it's a similar idea. What's ayin? What's saying? You feed us, you support us. That's what Poseach es yadacha is also saying. You're supporting us. So ayin and pay, either should have the similar kavanas or it's redundant. Like, what's going on? What's the difference between ayin and pay? So the Malbim points out, by ayin, you're saying you give food bi'itay at its time, which means you didn't necessarily have a surplus. You don't necessarily have an abundance, but Hashem feeds you. Like, you're starving, boom, the slice of bread is going to come. Whereas Poseach es yadacha is more with an abundance. Masbil chochai ratzon, meaning with ratzon, with an abundance, with favor, you have plenty. So both are important, right? You need to have food at the time you need it. But the reason why we have special kavanah is like Poseach, it's giving us more of a feeling that we have exactly what we need whenever we need it. And that's the difference between the ayin and pay. And the Shulchan Aruch said, you're supposed to have kavanah by pay. If you don't have kavanah by pay, go back and repeat it. Like if you got up to the reish, the shin, the top, he goes, oh my gosh, I didn't pay attention to my pay. Go back to pay. Poseach es yadacha and have a special kavanah that the way Hashem supports you should be in an abundance way with the ratzai. Okay, and this week's parsha. Parsha Sukkot. So it discusses the paraduma, which is a chayik. Some people point out, you have to realize just like the paraduma is a chayik, it says chukas ha-Torah. So many things in Torah are also chukim. We just don't understand. Many things. So paraduma is the famous one, but it says chukas ha-Torah. The whole Torah could be considered one big chayik. Even what we think we understand, we don't necessarily understand. Things that happen in life, we don't necessarily understand. It's one big chayik. But in the parsha, it discusses Tumah and Tara. And one of the things it discusses is what's called Tumas Oil, which means you have a dead body in the same tent, same house, same building as you. That's called Tumas Oil. Now, the Gemara in Brachos, in Daf Samach Gimel Beis, quotes this pasuk from the Torah, from this parsha. Zayis HaTorah, Ash Adam Ki Yamus Ba'Oil. A person who dies in the tent. So, Zayis HaTorah, Adam Ki Yamus Ba'Oil. The Gemara in Brachos makes a drasha, which is a life-changing drasha. He says like this, Ein from Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Ein divrei Torah miskayim ela b'mi shememis atzma ela. Torah will only have a kiyum for someone who kills himself on it. He's darshan, Zayis HaTorah, Adam kiyamos. Torah, you want Torah to be here? Adam kiyamos. You have to kill yourself. So now it has the pasha meaning, which is the way the Rambam seems to bring it down, which is you need to push yourself a little bit more. You need to, now we don't mean suicidal, but we mean kill yourself, meaning pushing yourself to the limits, to the strength that you never thought. There's a marathon happening, I think, tomorrow in Israel. I know someone's like training for this thing, pushing yourself like the extra, I can do another mile, I can do another 2 miles. So the same thing when it comes to learning, you have a certain physical strength and we all have our limitations. If you push a little bit more, you could probably do it. And that's odd. You have to kill yourself, push yourself, if you want Torah to be, have a kiyum by you. There's another shot that Chavetz Chaim said over. He says a story where someone called the house and one of the children answered and said, hi, can I talk to your father? And the child said, I'm so sorry, my father is dead right now, but call back in 2 hours. So what? What did you say? He said, I'm so sorry, my father is dead right now, but in 2 hours you can reach him. What are you talking about? Oh. And the Chavetz Chaim explained it with this. When you're learning, it should be like you're dead. The same way when you're dead, there's no phone calls, there's no interruptions, there's no, oh, I just want to, I'm dead, right? On Har Menuchos, no one's taking phone calls there. They're dead, there's no phone calls. When you're learning, you have to be dead to the world. I cannot be disturbed right now. closed, office is closed, phone is off, I'm not here right now. Other, if you want Torah to be, have a kiyum, you have to kill yourself, meaning, pretend you're dead, you're not here, lock yourself off. Now, I can't tell you to do that every time you're learning, you have certain family issues. Everyone on their own has to decide that. But definitely, as much as you can, when you can, I'm dead right now. I'm sorry. Call back in 2 hours. All right. Have a very good Shabbos. And next week, we'll do halachas of the 3 weeks. And that is a wrap.
Shabbos. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Shabbos.
Rabbeinu. Yes.
No question. First of all, so you said earlier with regarding the hands, if your hands are clean, not wet, after Nitilas Yadayim, anybody can touch your hand even if they didn't wash their hands before?
I am sorry. If your hands are dry. And
if your hands are dry, you wash Nitilas Yadayim, you dried your hands. And now they may have a little moisture, but they're dry.
Right. You do not need to wash your hands again.
But is there a lechat chila not to be?
As midas chasidus.
What?
Midas chasidus. If you're a chasid, you would. But you don't have to.
So meaning if one's wife wants to hold her hand while they're waiting for hamotzi,
right?
And wife didn't wash. That's
why.
Yeah.
I would say if it's crucial, okay, I wouldn't recommend it. If it happened, you don't need to wash again. I wouldn't go for it. I mean, there is a reason halacha not to do it. There's a reason halacha to wash again. So if I wouldn't lichat chila, go ahead and do that. But if it was done, you don't need to wash your hands again, and you don't need to punish that person who did that.
Okay. Other question is, a mezuzah fell in the house. Spiritually, it was a little bit of an interesting dynamic that it fell. Having have fallen asleep on the couch and not slept, and I slept on the couch, and in that room, the mezuzah fell in the morning as I was waking up. Very spooky.
Spooky. Pick it up, put it back on, and don't get spooked out.
Well, no, I said put it on there, but is there a reason to maybe check it? Is there a reason to be mefashvish b'masav?
If it hasn't been checked in every 3 or 4 years, to check it. If it's been checked within the last 3 or 4 years, there's no need to check it. There's no need to check the ricin.
And it's brand new.
It's fine. Put it back out with better tape, better glue.
You don't think there's something to that?
No.
Come on. It's a sign from God.